I'm Emily Theed, author of This Vicious Grace, coming in summer 2022 from Wednesday Books.
And I'm Anna, a teacher and a writer in the Queery Trenches.
And you're listening to Basic Pitches, where we...
Two basic pitches.
Break down the basics of writing and being a writer.
Welcome to Basic Pitches, where we talk like this now.
We hope you enjoy our superior audio.
Like 10 people just got off this podcast. They were like, what happened? What did I sign up for?
I'm sorry. That never happened. This is Basic Pitches After Hours. It doesn't sound sexy at all, but it's the voice we're stuck with because we started with it.
The whole episode is like,
there's
this.
No recovering from this.
None. How do we segue? I don't know. So obviously we're having a good time.
Yeah.
I hope everyone else is having a good time. And I know someone else who is having a really great time, and that's Emily Theed.
That's Emily Theed. Barnes and Noble's YA book club pick of the month.
Woo-hoo. Yes. Oh my gosh. What a time.
Like what an absolute baller.
I am just, like, there are things that come out about this book and about Emily that I'm like, just keep racking it up. Like, I know we don't, like, Emily, don't go on Goodreads. She will anyway. But on Goodreads, I've been, like, tracking Goodreads almost religiously. And the feedback is, like, overwhelmingly positive. And it's like this niche pocket of people that have found this book. And it just makes my heart glow every time I read a good review.
Yep. And it is a damn near perfect book that is now, I guess, Barnes & Noble picks one a month, it looks like. One YA book a month.
Yes.
So this is, if you log on Barnes & Noble today as we're recording, it is like the banner of the website. So it's going to be more than a small niche of people.
Oh my gosh.
I believe her book this evening was like, in the top, like, 60 best-selling books on Barnes & Noble right now.
Yes. Yes. I saw that as well.
It
yes.
is so awesome. So incredibly, intimidatingly awesome.
I keep thinking, like, you know, sometimes whenever people ahead of you kind of get published or get an agent, you're like, what would it feel like to be in their shoes? And I'm like, I would be pissing my pants and in a corner. Do with myself. She's handling it with grace.
Yes.
And lemony dresses.
Yes, lemon dresses. I'd be at least 7 days unshowered. sitting in a corner, apparently in a puddle of your piss from what you're saying.
Welcome to this
shaking,
episode of Basic
being like, Pitches. People are reading my book. People like it. People like
They're
it.
Reading my book. This corner sure smells bad, but I can't leave it.
Real outside this corner.
I promise. I can't promise for listen, but I promise there's no alcohol involved.
Oh no. No, none involved. We're just very happy for Emily.
We are very happy for Emily. It is a stellar launch week. It is a stellar launch 2 days. It's gonna be amazing these next couple of weeks.
And this is the cool part of like our parallel journeys on different timelines in terms of how we know Emily.
Right.
Because you've been good friends with her since Pitch Wars 2017.
Yeah, yes.
So you have seen her in previous drafts of previous books, and you have seen, I'm assuming, a very early draft of This Vicious Grace.
Mm-hmm. I have seen the Pitch Wars. I think I've seen the Pitch Wars 2017 book. I'm not sure. But I know I saw the book after. And then I saw a fairly early version of This Vicious Grace. And I read the version with the ending.
not the one that
she sent to people. So by the time I read it, it had an ending.
Okay.
So I've seen, I've been with her on that journey, which is just a blessing.
Yeah. And
just a blessing.
It's so cool. I read the version that she edited with her agent, but the version that got her a book deal, but she had not yet edited. So I'm curious how it's changed. I'm looking forward to reading it. Because the version I read, Emily was my Pitch Wars mentor in 2020, for those who don't know. And she, I just remember reading this book and being like, okay, this is somebody I can learn from. She is leagues ahead of where I am at this moment. And there's a tremendous amount I can learn from how she describes things, her dialogue, how she starts. I mean, that book like starts on a killer line, 3 weddings, 3 funerals.
Right.
Boom.
When I think about that book, I just think about the one thing that I want when I pick up a book most times, like not every time. Sometimes I just want to hurt. But sometimes when I pick up a book, I just want to have a good time. Yeah. And from, like you say, from those opening lines, I have a good time. I know I'm going to be taken care of because there is that edge of humor.
Mm-hmm.
I know it'll be okay. I know it'll get a little dark and scary. And I saw a review from somebody that I kind of agreed with, which is that it didn't feel YA, but not in the sense of content, but in the way that the prose is written.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is something that I truly admire about Emily's writing, is that it doesn't quite hold the reader's hand. It's very much all in the characters, which is that romance writing.
Yes, and it's accessible too. It's very accessible fantasy, where I think people who don't typically read YA would enjoy it.
For real, yeah. For real. But I think that's like part of the journey for you and other people, is getting to watch multiple people grow, right? Like you've talked about this before, and this always brings me heart, especially now that you're here where you are, which is that you've watched, you know, you've talked about it almost being like in a line, right? And it's finally your turn. You get to watch all these people reach these milestones, and now it's your turn.
Yes. I think, you know, there was a time, honestly, not too long ago, a couple of years ago, where it would have been hard for me to be close to someone as successful as Emily is, for example. That would
for
have
real.
Been, especially when I was still in the trenches. You know, it sounds shitty to say it out loud. Like, I wouldn't have been happy for my friend. I certainly would have been happy, but I think that my absolute, like, jealousy and envy would have been able to, like, would have clouded that for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me really getting my head straight in a, this isn't like a, you know, there's not some grand sum and someone has the bigger piece of the pie than somebody else. Like, you know, it's a cliched expression at this point for writing, but I really believe a rising tide raises all ships.
Mm.
And with Emily, you know, it happens to be a clear example, and beyond Emily too, but she was my mentor. But in order for me to even get into Pitch Wars, I had friends who had agents and book deals at that point who, you know,
yeah.
when I was still in the trenches, they were giving me feedback that they were learning. You know, we started at the same level-ish. They had access to, you know, better teachers. It was just me on my own that they then passed back to me. My ship got a little bit higher.
Right.
Then a strong mentor picked me. Emily picked me. And then I had access to all of her information from all of her agents and editors. And then, you know, my ship got higher from there. And then I got an agent, and the same thing happened. It was very editorial. We did a lot of revisions in 3 very quick weeks. And then my ship went higher. And so forth until I ended up with my own book deal. It's community.
I think that's so beautifully said, because I think a lot of people, especially people who are new to like the writing community, especially online, I think that's where this idea of, and we're not going to go here on this episode, but maybe it ties in, I don't know. But this idea of like cliques, right? And you know, there are some groups that hang out together, but it's more of we were together on something, we were together on a level, and then one person lifted up. One person got to a new milestone, and then they kind of help the other people vicariously get to their milestones, and they're just kind of traveling together. It's not a selective thing. And I can honestly admit that this has happened to me. I had after Pitch Wars 2017, that was hard. Like that was, I had tried for so many times to get into Pitch Wars and then finally get in, and then this book that was hot shit that year. Like I got to choose my mentor.
You were a war. You had several mentors who wanted you. That's crazy.
Oh, I was on the floor like crying because I was like,
corner.
I was in that corner and it smelled really bad, but it was awful. And then when it fell flat in the showcase, like flat, I think I got 2 requests, and that was another thing to deal with. And then I got to watch all of my friends get multiple requests and then get agents. And here I am left behind. And I remember one time my friend applied for author mentor match and made it in, and I didn't. And I was, it was for the first time I was pissed. Mm-hmm. I was so mad, and that was wrong of me. But I, like, at that time, it was like, I was mad. I was mad at the world. I was mad at everything. And then later I realized my friend was really trying to do a good job. They were like, everything I learn, I will bring back. I will bring back to you. And I was just too... I was just too shut in by that anger of not making it that I didn't listen to that. And I think I've missed out on a valuable moment.
And so tying that into today's episode in terms of joy thieves, that's a perfect example of the way that comparison stole your joy, made it hard for you to have the sort of joy that you typically have for a friend because you're an incredibly supportive friend. And then potentially, at least temporarily, prevented you from becoming a better writer as an indirect result of that.
Absolutely. I absolutely got in my own way. And I can realize that because it damaged the friendship. Aww. It, you know, it was one of those, like, I learned my lesson on that whole incident and have, like, since made sure and put things in place that I'm like, I'm never going to do that again because it wasn't her fault. It wasn't author mentor match's fault. It was my fault for getting upset.
I'm glad you're able to sort of acknowledge that about yourself. It's not an easy thing to talk about, but we've all been there. We've all been there where right. We've kind of hit a snapping point in terms of we just want this so, so badly. So, so badly.
Yes.
And that's...
Yeah.
That's what... And, you know, I've told this story before, I believe, on the podcast a while ago, and I'll tell it again. You know, my aha moment was really that one of my closest writer friends, Alexa Martin, so she's now on, I think, her 7th published book. She's a romance writer. So she pumps about... And she and I are very close, and I mean, I was unagented by book 6 of hers. Like, this is...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And so, and I was always happy for her. It was like, there were people I struggled to be happy for, but Alexa, I was always happy for her. But she was freaking out one day and really unhappy for a long period of time because of her frustration with, like, It's going to sound bad, but it's not bad. But it's like her TV rights were really hanging by like a thread. They had been bought, but they had not yet gone to production. And so she was in this limbo of this dream of mine could potentially come really, really true with like big names were attached to this. And it was stuck for months. And she was miserable. She was miserable and feeling worthless and going to this place of, you know, they finally figured out that I'm a sham. I'm a shit writer. And they finally figured out that I've been a fraud the whole time. And that they're the first person to realize that I can't write. And she has her own things that make her get negative on herself. She's got like her own insecurities that kind of creep up in her vulnerable moments. But she's a damn good writer and a writer I've always admired, who's had to me what looked like success out the gate. You know, she got an agent 2 days after her showcase in 2016, and she had her choice. And that's when I realized, like, oh shit, like, we're the same kind of miserable right now, and she's 6 books ahead of me. She's agented and well published, and we are the same kind of miserable, and that's no fault of her own. And it sort of opened my eyes, and I looked everywhere, and we always joke, like, Twitter is such a negative place, which it is, but so much of it is people being miserable at whatever phase in writing they are because it's grueling. And so that was my aha moment of like, I'm not going to be able to sustain this. I could be miserable chasing this dream, this miserable dream, unless I figure out now when I have no stakes, how to be happy and write.
Right. I admire that about you of seeing this, like making this connection. Cause I don't think I ever would have made that connection. I just, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, that person's like being negative on Twitter all the time. I guess I won't interact with them, but like taking that to be a thing of like, oh, obviously not with your friend, but like, you know, those negative presences, I never would have looked at where they're at in the process and then connected that. I never would have made that higher order thinking. I think that is phenomenal.
Oh, well, thank you. Hopefully that's my psychology training coming to work for myself for once.
You can tell. Gosh. That's why, like, talking to you about these specific things, I was like, I don't know anything. I'm going to sound like I'm just burbling like a baby. So the only thing that I can kind of contribute to that, because we talked about it just a little bit, is I will bring it up, is Big Magic. I actually have the book right here.
Go for it.
Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. It is the author of Eat, Pray, Love, which I've never read, but I did watch the movie forever ago. I don't know if it's good. Sorry. Hate me, I guess.
The movie or the book?
Yeah, I've only watched the movie one time.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I haven't read the book
either. Oh, neither have I. But the but the movie's fantastic.
But then, yeah, I remember enjoying it.
It's inspirational. Yeah.
Inspirational, because that's like the big thing with her and Big Magic. And I wrote down a couple of things that like really sparked with me. And I think the big thing that she talks about is like the road trip. And she specifically targets fear, but I think it can be any quote unquote negative emotion. So how I take it is this anger, right? Like this, or this unhappiness is... it's you, your creativity, and for her, your fear in a car. And the thing is not to kick fear out. You can't stop being afraid. You can't stop being angry. You can't stop being sad. It's going to happen. And rather than fighting your whole life to get rid of it, just acknowledge that it's there and then say you get to sit in the back seat. And you and creativity get to do the driving and the navigating. And I think what you've done there in looking at this connection between her experience, your experience, and saying this isn't tangible, this isn't long term, this isn't sustainable, because I like that word sustainable. You were like, okay, you get in the back seat and then I and creativity are gonna drive. Like, I know it exists, but I'm gonna navigate around it. I'm gonna navigate through it.
Oh, I love that. I really, really love that metaphor. I need to read Big Magic. I can't tell you how many times I've had conversations like this with writers, and they're like, well, Big Magic. And I'm like, oh, I haven't read it. And they're like, but you are Big Magic. You need to read it. You love Big Magic already.
You really are. Like, every conversation I've ever had with you is straight out of her book.
Oh, that's awesome. I feel like a little bit of an asshole for calling myself Big Magic without reading the
book. But you are. I'll say it. Don't be an asshole. Then I'm an asshole.
You're a pissy asshole in the corner shaking. Why do I believe you?
Why, yes, I am.
Well, I'm taking that metaphor and I'm playing with it a little bit.
Okay, I'm ready.
Because I agree. I think there's something to acknowledging the feelings and understanding that the feelings are valid. Like, the fear is valid, and like, part of it comes from the sheer desire that so many of us have. Like, I think this is my favorite thing about getting together with writers, either in real life or doing like Zooms or whatnot, but really and truly interacting with other writers, is that, you know, I don't have other writers in my personal life. I don't have them in my everyday life. It's I have very supportive friends who will ask me about books, etc. But you can't get the passion across. Like, there's something so lovely about talking with other writers who have this passion, especially writers in the trenches, like, who are just like fighting unpaid for this thing that they've dreamed of, that they just can't help but do, even though you know, it's extremely time consuming. It's not cost effective. You know, it prevents them from dating, from having a life, from having all sorts of things, from spending time with family, but they just have this passion for it. But I think that passion is why we feel things so intensely when they don't go well.
That is so true. I think that is because we are putting so much on the line with it. And I think even saying that, I don't know how I feel about putting it as like on the line, because then it becomes almost like something that you're weighing, right? Mm-hmm. This, like, there is a goal to reach here that if I don't reach that, then I'm a failure, you know, but.
So this is where I get preachy about goals.
Are we doing an episode on broken goals?
Are we?
We should. Okay, get preachy.
So
I'm ready.
Here's where I get preachy about goals, right? Part of this is just keeping in mind what, you know, a goal should be within our control. A dream is allowed to be out of our control, but a goal should be within our control, because otherwise we're just banging our heads against the wall. And it's not, we need something that we could sink our teeth in for a goal. It can't be something that you could be the best writer on the planet, the absolute best writer on the planet, and have bad luck, bad timing, bad opportunities. And so we need goals within our measure, which I know is something you and I have talked about quite a bit.
Right, right. And I know that's something that we are going to do a future episode on, probably maybe, I don't know, the next episode. But soon Excellent. We'll do an entire episode on Broken Goals, because I think it's one of those things that we can break down at each step of the process for people. So if you're just drafting, here's what a broken goal may be. Here's something we tell ourselves all the time that we may not realize is a broken goal and causing us frustration. Like, that's causing us pain, and we need to fix that.
Absolutely. If you are published waiting for your cover, if you are, you know, published waiting for, you know, results of your book sales, there at every phase in the game, there are opportunities and really, I guess, ways to get off the road. If we're using the driving metaphor here, there's
right.
I'm like shaking with excitement to talk about this stuff next time. That would be awesome.
I'm so excited. Like, it's seriously, that blog post of yours just opened my mind. Like,
that's awesome.
It absolutely, it caught me, like, because there were some things that I had that I was like titling goals, and they're not goals, they're dreams. And there's a big difference between the two. And that's okay. Like, that's okay.
That is okay. And we can want those dreams. We can absolutely want those dreams. But if we make them our goals, then we have no, like, it's not up to us then to decide if we've met our goal. It needs to be up to us.
Right. Oh my gosh. There was something that Big Magic, again, kind of tied into this. Oh, talking about goals and like this idea of joy thieves, right? I think a lot of people think, she talks a lot in Big Magic about leading a creative life. And I don't know if this is an episode all by itself at some point, but one part, she has many pieces to this of living creatively. But one of them is like what you're in pursuit of. And hers is never, is it in the pursuit of publishing a book, in writing a song, in getting an album. She never talks about that. One of the things she does say, a creative life is to be in pursuit of the gems within ourselves. And it's this idea of you are constantly pushing forward with just this effort, right? That effort is what is this whole thing is about. It's that road trip, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the fact that the car is even moving on the road. That is success. And in that, I'm trying to find like how this all fits together, because it's such good stuff all over the place. But frustration, she says, is the process, right? So being frustrated that you're not have like that you don't have an agent, or that you don't have a book deal, or that you didn't hit the New York Times bestseller list, like whatever that's about. Mm-hmm. We all know it's magic.
and not magic.
Yeah, not big
it's
magic.
Dark magic.
That's magic. But it's true. It's true. But it is this way of you have to navigate these things. Like, you have to figure out how to live with them rather than against them. And some of that is making sure your goals are aligned, right? Making sure you're reframing how you think about certain situations in your life.
I'm chewing on that. I love that.
Right. It doesn't quite fit, but the thing that I really liked was with the frustration is the process. When you're super frustrated with something, and you're not figuring it out, like this character isn't working, or I'm not getting an agent yet while my friends are. It's not a thing. It's just saying, okay, that's part of the process. That's mm-hmm. part of me having to write another book, right? For me, it was always like, all right, that one didn't work. Next, that one didn't work. Next. And then I always treated each book as something I needed to learn. So after my Pitch Wars book, I wrote a book that was like, all right, we're going to learn how to write a character-driven story. And I did great. The romance, flat as hell. He's a pizza box. My critique partners were like, I love this main character, but the love interest is literally the Little Caesars man. Like, he's just a pizza box. And I was like, thanks.
It's true. Progress. It matters.
Progress.
It matters. My so first, the next time, yeah, go ahead. No, please.
Right. No. And then like after that, I just kind of progressed from there. I was like, okay, fine. I'm going to I put romance on the backside, and I was like, I'll figure that out later. This time I'm going to learn how to figure out a magic system and world building. And so they were like, great, put the love interest still a pizza box. And then after that, I was like, all right, damn it. We're going to learn how to do romance. And what she talks about just with that, and then I'll stop talking. But
no, don't.
That whole thing That whole thing is, she talks about how it's a balance, right? She talks about the tormented creative life. So this idea of being a starving artist and tormented, like, artist or whatever, that outlook is, this is awful. So when you say, this is awful that I haven't gotten an agent, that's a tormented life and you're causing yourself pain. If you say, this is awful that this book isn't working, you're causing yourself pain. That's tormented. But if you want to look at the tranquil, she talks about the tranquil creative life, you change it from this is awful to this is interesting. Ooh. And you say, yeah. Okay, this is interesting. People say my love interest is a pizza box. What does that mean? This is interesting. What do I have to learn? Or this is interesting. My friend with a similar premise got an agent. What does that mean? This is interesting. Like, and it just allows this inquiry. Instead of saying, this is awful because I didn't succeed, you are now saying, this is interesting. What can I learn from this?
Okay, so this totally parallels like a psychotherapy technique.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah, it's very exciting right now.
Teach me.
Pulling my hair out with excitement. I don't want to lose the thought too. So what you're describing is moving frustration from a limbic system experience, from a pure like emotional physiological response of, which I'm assuming what this author is saying is then prevents or inhibits creativity or growth. And you're moving it to like the prefrontal cortex, so where thought takes place and problem solving takes place. And so you're taking frustration and you're using it as a tool for problem solving. You make it into a puzzle. And this is what we do with, you know, for example, with anxiety. Like when I always encourage my patients, like if you're feeling anxious, say, okay, I'm anxious right now. This is my anxiety. What is my anxiety saying to me? And the idea is even just taking that, we're shifting it from, oh, I'm so fucking anxious. Oh my God, I'm so anxious, to, okay, I'm anxious right now. This is my anxiety. What is my anxiety telling me right now? Okay, my fists are clenched because I'm driving on a bridge. And I always get anxious when I drive on a bridge because my mind goes to the worst place. And this is my mind is trying to protect me. This is a survival instinct gone wrong. And even just if the anxiety is still there, now it is in the part of your brain responsible for thinking clearly, which is inhibiting the part of your brain responsible for, God, I'm going to die on this bridge. Like your face right now is great.
I love learning about the brain. I think if one little road in my life had been different, I would have definitely gone into psychology, but I didn't. So that's why I have wonderful friends like you. Holy shit.
Isn't that cool? And
it
just like creates even a pause for you. Even that pause, so much can happen in a pause between an emotion and a thought. Like if you can just get yourself to pause by saying, I am having this feeling, you have achieved so much in that. And for the same thing to happen in writing, I mean, it's brilliant. The idea of like, I am getting this painful feedback. I am getting this feedback. My love interest, who I have like worked so hard on for months and months and months and given up so much to make this come to life, who in my head is perfect, is the perfect person, is a pizza box.
He's a pizza box.
That's interesting.
That's interesting. Right. Oh my. I've had this thought since I started therapy, right? I started and now I've tentatively exited therapy and I've been out for a while. I started having these like, obviously like breakthroughs in life, right? Like I'm sure you see it with your patients and you know about how this works. So like there's things you start applying it. Like I've started applying things to my life and things are sinking in where it's like, oh, I don't do this anymore. And one of the things that started happening was that it started applying to my creativity and toward writing. It did not, like, yes, I could look at characters and break down characters a little bit more because I was like, ooh, I know some things. So I know like, okay, this is probably why. And we can go deeper. Like EMDR wrecked me, but it's also the most fascinating thing in the world because I won't dive too deeply, but it applied to me because there were a lot of things that I had anxieties about. There were a lot of things that I was making like my self-worth. And a lot of my journey is I don't tend towards anger, like that one story, that's not my norm. My norm is to feel badly about myself. And I learned that that was part of some of the stuff that I had gone over in therapy. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like there's such a strong correlation between figuring out your brain, figuring out how you react, why you react that way, and then also applying that to your creative life. So like doing these episodes is literally just a bag full of cookies that I'm eating and I'm very happy.
I love it. No, and I feel the same, and I've had the same experience in my own therapy too. And like you said, not only in, oh, now I can write deeper characters because I have a better idea of like what's underneath. Oh, I just thought I was easy to get along with, but really I suppress my anger and, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
But even just giving, like caring enough about yourself to give yourself permission to spend time doing what you love, even if you don't get paid for it.
Right, right. And I like want to make sure that we talk about that as a joy thief, right?
Yes.
Giving yourself permission applies to so many different things. I think there's a lot that we self-reject on. Even so far as I think one of the phrases I hear or say the most to critique partners, I hear it myself, and I literally have heard it and read it a million times in different words in my edit letter, which is, can we get a little bit more of this? Lean in, that idea of lean in. And I think that's not giving yourself permission. You're not giving yourself permission to do this big wild idea in your head.
Mm-hmm. Because of fear, potentially? Or I know, yeah. I do that often. I do this weird thing. I hope people don't one day read Revelle and be like, oh, she's right. She did this terribly weird thing. Hopefully it's been corrected out of me by now. But I do this thing where I think of the worst thing that could happen, because we're supposed to think of the worst thing that could happen. And I think, no, that's too hard. I can't do that. Oh. That's too hard.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Let me think of something less interesting to read that's a little bit easier to write or to deal with, because I can't blow up this thing or ruin this person in this way, because then I have to write my way out of that. And that's really intimidating.
Right, right. That's, again, it's so funny because that is also part of that process, right? That's part of that journey of figuring things out, is by doing something a little bit harder than what you've done before and saying, okay, I've never done this thing before. Like, I've never ruined a character's life before and then kept them alive. So
that's really well done. That's exactly, true. Usually the book ends. Like, ends.
Right. I ruined his life and now it's over.
The end. And maybe that's part of writing for yourself too, right? Because, and that's what with the book I'm working on now, which is like book two in my book deal, but unrelated. And it's been like an effort in, you know, I really, again, try to be like a grounded person and write for myself and keep the joy in it. And so I'm like, okay, my challenge in my publishing journey is that every book I write, I want it to be better than the last, not have a higher Goodreads rating or not have a better whatever, not no one paid more for it, but just to be where I read it and say, oh, this is better than the last one.
Right.
And part of that is then writing for me. It's really writing for me. Mm-hmm. And if I screw up a character arc, like in this, I'm writing dark characters who are doing very bad things. You know, they're not necessarily unlikable, but they are not my usual easygoing people. And that's a challenge to me. And if I screw it up, then it's for me. Like I can't be thinking about like, oh, but people are going to read this. My editor's going to see this. My agent's going to see this. I have to just think like, okay, I'm going to try this hard thing and I'm going to try to enjoy it. I have to give myself permission to do this hard thing, regardless of the external feared consequence.
Writing for yourself. I think that, and like you said, making each book a goal for yourself, that is doing the big magic thing, which is finding gems in yourself. So it's, you know, it's finally writing a romance book where they go, huh, he's not a pizza box. I did it. There's the gem. I did it. It's mine. I can have that forever. I can have that joy. Maybe a million other things about it are broken, but I found that, right? And it's part of setting those, and again, we'll talk about it in another episode, but those, you know, good goals, those healthy goals of I'm going to write it better. I'm going to do this thing. And sideways connected, again, big magic. I'm just going to keep saying it because it's literally a warm hug of a book. Like I wish, ugh. She talks about how you do not need permission to be creative. You are entitled to it. Every human being is entitled to being creative, like in a you are entitled. It's an innate thing. When you were born, you are entitled to that. And you should write that way. Like you should write or create a song or paint or whatever. You are entitled to that. It's not something you have to earn.
Oh, that gives me chills. That like hits me right to the core. That I have struggled with that so much, and I can honestly say that my writing improved when I started to overcome that.
Right.
But I had such tremendous guilt when I first started writing regularly, and that I had a baby. I'm like, I should be spending more time. Everyone says sleep when the baby sleeps, and you know, and I was writing when the baby slept all the time. I was writing from, you know, 10 to 11 nap, 2 to 4 nap, 8 to midnight.
Right.
And I was running my own therapy practice, and I just had tremendous guilt of like, oh, I should be making more money for my family. I should be, you know, I shouldn't be spending all my time doing this. I should be seeing more people. I should be doing should.
Right. And those things like that word should, that is a joy thief in any capacity. I mean, it might tell you a micro thing about yourself, but if it is in relation to doing this thing that you love, then that is a joy thief, right? If you're saying I should do this rather than this thing I'm absolutely passionate about.
Totally. There's a poem I want to pull up too, that a good friend of mine had sent me a couple weeks ago, that really, because this is a conversation I've had with her about just like the guilt I would have for writing or really putting time into writing or disappearing and just writing.
I would love that.
Oh, here it is. I don't know how much we can read of someone's work. Is there like a...
Oh, I think it's like... For a book, isn't it like 250 words?
I'll just
whatever.
I'll read one stanza of it. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
They'll come for us.
Right. If they come for me, it's fine.
Waiting.
If you'd like to come into the corner,
we will cry and probably pee ourselves.
Do you dare? Do you dare copyright? Do you dare?
Okay. So it's by Mary Oliver. It's an essay from her book Upstream, and it is 6 a.m. and I am working. I am absent-minded, reckless, heedless of social obligations, etc. It is as it must be. The tire goes flat. The tooth falls out. There will be 100 meals without mustard. The poem gets written. I have wrestled with the angel, and I am stained with light, and I have no shame. Neither do I have guilt.
Holy shit.
The whole poem is like that. The whole essay is like that. It's so poetic that I don't know if it, I think it's technically an essay, but it's very poetic. Isn't that gorgeous? Doesn't that just hit home? Oh my
gosh.
I just have to read that one line again. I have wrestled with the angel, and I am stained with light, and I have no shame, neither do I have guilt.
I have chills. That doesn't happen to me often. Oh my.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous poem about at least my interpretation of it. I keep calling it a poem. Again, it could be an essay. I'm sorry, people who care about those titles. I'm not very good with declarative memory.
It's okay.
Okay.
It's beautiful.
It's absolutely beautiful. And to me, it's about just pursuing creativity and it being a must. That's something that should come before you know, grocery shopping and social obligations. She has another line that's about like, if I don't show up or if I'm late, be glad I showed up. Be glad I remembered, because I am doing this thing constantly and this creative thing. And it is the only thing that matters when I'm doing it. And that's okay.
This is in a way ties very indirectly to it, but talking about that thing of self-worth, right?
Mm-hmm.
This idea of putting... We put that self-worth into, I have to write the book. So, because then if you feel guilty about it, then it becomes a thing of, I have to write this book for X purpose beyond, I have to write this book or do this thing because it makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
So feeling guilty means you put a price on it that then passes that self-worth on to other people. So it's other people. Then you think other people are looking at me.
Yes.
To sell my book, to do this thing, to make this album, to get an agent. And that absolutely will kill the whole joy of it.
Absolutely. And does this happen to you? Like, if I don't write for a certain amount of time, I get really and truly like itchy. Like, I am not in a good mood.
Add itchy, but put a B in front of it. I get cranky.
Yeah.
I get I get restless, and it's usually because I haven't sat down and worked.
It's the same thing that happens if I realize I haven't eaten or drank enough water or something like that. And I'm like, what's wrong with me? Oh, yeah, wait, no, I forgot to eat today because I've been so busy, or I didn't eat enough. Or it's the same thing. Right. Sometimes I'll be like, what's wrong with me? I'm so snappy and miserable. And I'm like, oh, I haven't written in 6 days because of this and that. And that's like, so right now my kids are, they're in that lovely week and a half between school and camp. And I told myself going in, like, I'm not going to get like that. This is not their fault. They deserve to have me present. Once they're at camp, I will have a ton more writing time.
Right.
And so I'm on, like, I don't even know what day I'm on of not writing. Probably, like, day 6 or day 7. And I, like, feel that itch. And I'm like, this is, reading helps.
Right.
But
anything in that creative pursuit helps, but it's not the thing.
It's not the thing. So it's like when I've been going on my walking the dog and listening to, you know, what I've written so far and jotting down ideas and doing voice recordings and just like pre-writing stuff, because, you know, it is something as, it is an urge as strong as eating. It is a need as strong as eating and drinking. And who are we to deny that?
This makes me so – this is the conversation you were talking about. Like, you can't have this conversation with other people who are not dedicated to following a creative pursuit. Not saying that there's anything more valuable or less valuable about it, but you just can't have this same level of conversation. You can't say this and have somebody understand it entire.
No, I think I could sound very selfish. I think to someone who – without any creativity, I'd be very selfish.
I had, and I will talk about this until I will answer any questions about it. I will talk to anybody about it. But I was having a really hard time at a school that I had just moved to. And I made the decision, at the end of the school year in the middle of the pandemic, I was like, I had the privilege, and I understand it is a privilege, to quit my job. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it is not worth my life. It is not worth my mental health. It is not worth any of this. And I felt like such a shitbag for months, because I felt so selfish and I felt so just worthless. And I'm just, again, privileged enough to have a healthy, healthy, loving partner who was like, you're not, you needed this. We don't know where you would have been if you hadn't have taken this break. And really and truly, I got my part-time job. I'm having to get a full-time job now, but this space, being that selfish, has allowed me to make bounds that I don't think I could have made. If I were still doing that full-time miserable job, I wouldn't have applied to a Pitch Wars. I wouldn't have gotten in Pitch Wars. I wouldn't have gotten an agent. Like, I don't know. I think that other people may look at it as being selfish. I'm sure a lot of people in my immediate circle who are not creatives and not in that situation, I'm sure they looked at me and were like, what is her deal? Her husband's real great to her. Me. Like, whatever.
I'm glad you put selfish in air quotes as you said it, because that's
right.
It's important because, yes, it's almost like something you see in movies as like the line of like an unsuccessful, like still lives in their parents' basement. Oh, they're writing their first novel. Ha ha ha. You know?
Oh my gosh. Right.
It's a punchline. It's I quit my job to write my first novel. It's like a punchline of self-importance or something.
Right.
And it does not like, but like you said, in talking with other writers, do you realize like, oh no, this is something I can't turn off. And frankly, that it needs to grow. It needs air. It needs water. It needs soil. Like, it can grow. Also very much a place of privilege, but it's the same. I've had this conversation with my partner countless times, because in working for myself, I can scale up and I can scale down. And I always have guilt. Like, I sometimes love my job. I love my job. But sometimes I do scale down, or at least we'll talk with him about scaling down. And I feel such tremendous guilt because I got my PhD to help people. And I have like a unique skill set. I'm good at the sort of therapy that I do. But I the way I always phrase it to him is, I just really feel like if I had more time to put into this, it could be something beautiful. It could be something, I could really do something with it.
Mwah. Like, I am... Like, I'm almost teary-eyed because this is something that I have struggled with for a long time, is I have been told many times, and I have seen evidence of it many times, I'm not patting myself on the back, it's taken me a while to, like, accept this, that I am a bomb-ass teacher.
Oh, absolutely.
I have students that come back. You know, it's, I think the tried and true is that students who come back and, you know, rather than just be like, you were so cool, you let us do whatever, they're like, you were so cool. Like, I've had students come back and say, you're the reason I know how to write papers.
Wow.
No one else taught me how. But I don't feel called to it like I do writing. I don't feel called to anything else more than I do writing. And that makes me feel so badly, because there's that narrative, and I'm sure it's the same thing with you, where you get this narrative from people saying, oh, we need teachers like you. We need therapists like you. We need psychologists like you. We need whatever like you. And now you're like,
I mean,
I can be providing to the world.
Yeah. I can feel the guilt. It almost hurts to talk about it because it's such a shameful thing that I almost feel bad saying it. But I'd imagine it's the same for a teacher right now. But, you know, we're in the middle of a mental health pandemic. This is a mental health crisis. My phone rings off the hook, and I specialize in child and adolescent mental health, specifically trauma. Yeah. But there, you know, and I work in a fairly affluent area where a lot of people have access to care, and there's, it doesn't even matter if care is affordable or not. People are going to do it because they have that sort of means. And even then, there's just not enough therapists to go around. There's not enough. Mm-mm. So I think my voicemail has been broken like so many times. I can't even tell you. My phone rings off the hook for people desperate for therapy for their kids. Who the fuck am I to say, I'm sorry, I'm writing a novel?
Right.
Because it brings me joy.
Exactly. And can I bring in a thing that will help us feel a little bit better?
Please, because I'm feeling pretty terrible.
No, it made me feel, and it makes me feel terrible, because my ultimate goal is to, not ultimate goal, because we're going to talk about broken goals, but like the ultimate dream for me is to not have to do anything other than write for a while. Mm-hmm. Like that would be delightful. That's a big dream. And then I would know I'm not teaching and, you know, helping the youth of my community, and then that makes me feel shitty. However, the practice, it's called The Practice Shipping Creative Work by Seth Godin. A friend gave this to me. Tyler doesn't listen to this, but thank you, Tyler. I'm sorry, I've been reading it for like 2.5 years. It's not a book that you read cover to cover. It's full of little bullet points. Huh. So you can literally pick it up, read a bullet point, and put it down. And read into, basically what I do is I read until I hit a bullet point that's like, oh shit, I have to write that down. And one of them is, by putting yourself on the hook, doing something creative, you're performing a generous act. You are sharing insight and love and magic. And the more it spreads, the more it's worth to all of those who are lucky enough to experience your contribution.
Wow.
So you are doing a selfless act. You are becoming the person that somebody else wants to be. You are writing the thing that somebody else needs to hear. You are living a way that somebody else needs to see can be done. And that in itself is selfless. Is doing a service.
It's interesting because as I listen to you, my brain agrees with you. My prefrontal cortex agrees with you. My limbic system is like guilt, guilt, guilt. But you save lives, guilt, 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 you know? But I know you're right. I know you're right. And the truth is I just can't do it any other way. I need to write. I am not a good therapist. I'm not a good therapist on when I haven't written in 6 days.
That.
I'm not. And if I, you know, I'm realizing as we talk, so in terms of joy thieves, one that in prepping for today that I hadn't really considered was guilt. But what a joy thief guilt is.
Yeah. Right. That's, listen, that was the bulk of my therapy was guilt. How I feel it all the time. And it was a lot of me figuring out, like, why do I feel this guilt? And 9 times out of 10, it was other people's feelings that I was allowing to guide my own feelings. So it's like, well, I feel guilty because they'll look at me and say, who the fuck cares what they say? Who the fuck are they? Are they in my pod of people that I actually like? Is it my husband that I care about that's gonna think? And even then, sometimes it's like, I don't care. I have to live my own, you know, like.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. It's there's something like really powerful in being able to get to a place where you really and truly start caring less what other people think, which I don't know. I don't know. And there's so many people who write so much better and so much younger than me. I don't know if I had the maturity in my early 20s to get to that point. Like, it's been a journey for me to be like, I have a friend who always says, like, you know, as you get older, you have a bag of fucks And you just can't hold them all. And you have too much other shit in there. And so you have to just start shedding fucks. You just drop them from your bag. You have to stop giving a fuck about so many things.
Yes. Yes.
And I've shed a lot of fucks in the last 5 years, you know, in particular. Right. But that was in my 30s.
Right. And you, I think you talked about it in The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. I think you mentioned this about how he talks about how in that book he talks, and you know way more about it than I do, but he talks about how your life is only so long.
Yes.
And you only have so many fucks to give. Like literally, I think he like opens the book, not opens, but like at some point early on, he's like, sorry for everybody who has like a fear of death, but here we go. I'm with you. He literally was like, we're all going to die.
Yes.
Your husband's going to die. Your wife's going to die. Your dog's going to die. Your neighbor down the street's going to die. And you don't know when, but you have only so many fucks.
We're all going to die, and your gravestone is not going to say, you know, here lies Anna, who quit her job for a year in order to pursue happiness and selfishly write her novel. No, it's not going to say that.
it's not.
No, it does not matter. Those fucks die with us. And so why have them now? Why that let them weigh us down? Yeah, the whole, like, the revolutionary part of that book is really like, hey, you're going to die. And so you might as well do what you want with the time you have here. And more specifically, you might as well only give fucks about a handful of things and give those fucks wholeheartedly and then don't give a fuck about other things. And figure out what the two or three things are you're going to give a fuck about, whether that's family, whether that's da-da-da, whether that's writing. And I remember reading that again at a crucial time for me where I was like, should I be quitting writing? Should I be doing other things because I'm bad at it and nobody wants to, you know, buy my book and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I couldn't quit this if I tried. This is by all means, this is in my top three. Family slash friends, something I can't think of right now, but I'm sure is there. Writing.
Right. No, it's, I think that's something that I'm like still coming to terms with is all of these things that I want to be or think I should be or that people think I should be. And there's a lot of reckoning that's happening. I can see it happening with my family, right? Where I'm changing my personality a little bit and they're like expecting this old personality. And I'm like, I know I stopped giving a fuck about that.
Yes.
And I no longer have to do that thing or act that way. And now I put all my fucks in this. And if you don't jive with that, okay. That says it's another big magic thing. But she's like, she talks about how feedback, and I think this applies to any part of our life, feedback from other people says more about them than it does about you. And if they say something and you truthfully consider it, like, okay, you don't like the way I don't care about this one thing, like teaching, right? People could look at me and say, I can't believe you would abandon students like this. Okay, what does that say about me? I was unhappy, and that means that I'm choosing something else, and that might be a little selfish. But what does this say about you? You're not going to college to become a teacher.
Right.
You weren't there in the classroom when I needed your help. Mm-hmm. Like, it says a lot about them and the guilt they may feel, or whatever it may be.
Yeah, it's
and
their I think, own issue.
Yeah.
It's what there was a quote, I don't remember who it was. I honestly think it was, like, Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, random, but I feel like I saw this video on, like, her Instagram, and she essentially said that we are not responsible for what people think about us, nor is it our business. It is not our business what other people think of us. Yeah, really, for a second, like, it's jarring, and my first instinct was like, yes, it is, but then I couldn't think of one good reason it's my business what other people think of me. Those are their own thoughts, their own issues, their own private conversations at worst, private thoughts at best. And it's not my business. I think things about other people. Am I right? Am I wrong? Doesn't fucking matter. So when we really take it as something that's going to happen regardless, it's out of our control, like, it's a lot easier to let go of that fuck. And that is why I haven't showered in 7 days. I stopped giving up.
Thanks for taking this on a joke because my mind is literally exploding.
I just want to clarify, it's been about 12 hours I showered this morning. That's a lot.
Really,
it was yesterday.
That you showered this morning. Oh man, I'm really glad you showered. We have to update that counter on the wall.
It's been one day.
It's been 1 hour since I peed in the corner. No, I'm just kidding. Or am I?
Oh my my God. I just imagine people, like, listening to this in their car and being like, that's not funny. Why do they think that's funny?
Why are they laughing?
And then I remember.
You know what? And that's your thought.
It's not our business.
That's not my business.
So this is what happens, ladies and gentlemen and other people, when you really stop giving a fuck what people think. You talk about pissing yourself on a podcast.
Oh, my gosh. I'm like having a, like, truthfully, all, like, not all joking aside, because I will probably make this a creepy voice again. but I am so, I'm not as consumed as I used to be about what people think of me, because that was a block in my writing. So if we go back to writing specifically, I think that was sharing with other people. I would hold on to a draft with white knuckles.
Oof.
And be like, it's not ready, it's not ready, it's not ready, it's not ready. And it was mostly because, yeah, sure, it's not ready, but also I was really afraid of handing it over and then looking foolish, looking like I didn't know anything, looking like I was writing like a kindergartner. I was so afraid of what other people would think about me or judge me as. And now I'm like, I've gotten to the point now where I'm like, all right, it's as polished as I want to turn out a draft to somebody. Here, help me with this very specific thing. And I don't care if I spelled this word wrong. I don't care if I have the same sentence in there twice. I just want you to look at the concept and you can think I'm a dork or whatever. I don't care.
It's such a simple but elegant concept, right? That that you actually overcoming your fear or overcoming the insecurities, all these various joy thieves, both fear and insecurity, actually helps you be a better writer. Because like we talked about in our last episode, assuming they come out in order, the deliberate practice one. You getting feedback and being in a place to really and truly hear feedback and take it without emotion, as Shonda Rhimes says, take it as this was not clear to me. That allows you to grow. That gives you opportunity for growth that when fear is in the front seat or behind the wheel, you don't have otherwise. And so that it's like I'm making the mind blown gesture right now, because it's, you know, we're talking about these thieves of joy. So far we've named, I've been writing them down a little bit. I'm a very responsible person.
Look at you go. I saw you taking notes and I was like, oh, this is professional now. I am not professional.
I was actually drawing a picture of you. Just kidding. Yeah, oh. I can't draw. I was not drawing a picture of you.
Pay me like one of your corners. I don't know. I didn't have a good word there.
I've been taking notes on the joy thieves so far, and we have frustration, competition, comparison, which is similar but a little bit different, right? Like, I think comparison is the back and forth, and competition is there can only be one.
Yes.
Stress. Also, like, creative ink wells being low. I call them ink wells. That's from my book. Creative wells being low.
Love it.
I put the word should, which is the best way we can. Should is definitely a joy thief. Giving yourself permission, or not giving yourself permission, rather, is the thief. Yeah. And now we're talking about guilt. And the really beautiful but eloquent thing within here is that you, like, we're not just talking about them because they're frustrating things. When we were prepping for this episode, we're like, how do we get people past identifying joy thieves and then growing? Like, how do we move past? How do we find the joy? But yeah, what's really cool is you identify these things, and you, like, if you can identify them and work past them, you become a better writer. Like, if you're not afraid, you take in more feedback and you grow. If you stop comparing yourself, then you put on your blinders and you go. If you stop saying should, then you let yourself expand creatively what you're thinking about and you go. There's not much we can do about external stress. The world is a dumpster fire right now. But I'd imagine we either hit ourselves over the heads on days we can't write, or we give ourselves permissions to take days off. And when that itch gets so strong, we go back and we grow. And it's really like a beautiful thing. It's not simply about, you know, it's ironically, it's not simply about making yourself happier as a writer and not quitting. It's about getting better, which is, again, the goal, because it's the only thing within our control in writing. It's not the dream. It's the goal. We can get better. We can be less miserable and we can get better. And each book can be better than the last. And we are the only ones who get to say that we're fucking awesome. We are fucking awesome. What happens if I drop my mic? Does it make a...
Yes, I'm keeping whatever that sound was in this podcast. We're done. The episode is over. Thank you for coming to Lissa's TED Talk.
If you want to hear more from me, I live in a corner. It smells lovely. And a visit sometimes if I talk in this voice. Sorry, I can't do it. No drugs were taken during this podcast.
I love that we're doing this voice right after you made this bone-chilling, soul-uncovering connection that will haunt me for weeks in the best way possible.
And yet we're talking like this again.
Because this shows that we contain multitudes. We do. And we are giving ourselves permission to be silly.
We are. Which is the joy of it, right? Like, it's one thing. Yeah. I would enjoy having a very serious conversation with you about these things, but I also enjoy laughing with you.
It's everything. And I think that was also, like, a big thing of making this podcast was, and I think it's something that resonates with some people. Hopefully I'm not wrong on this. Somebody out there is like, I hate your personalities. Whatever you think of me is not my business.
It's not.
But it was this concept of being able to have these conversations and kind of share this frank look into two different people's, or several, at this point, several different people's lives, to kind of uncover these things that we don't normally talk about. And it's, again, it's that permission to let people in and to let them know, like, you're not so alone in all these little thoughts that you have.
Yeah, and I think that's the really beautiful part of how much you shared today, and being open about your own therapy and being open about friendship mistakes that you've made, or writer friendship mistakes that you've made, because it's so relatable and we've all been there in some way or another.
Right.
And it just, that's why I have always enjoyed your podcast, is because it makes it, you and Emily have always both been very real on here. You've been very real on here. And so it's not simply like taking in information, but it's like, here are two real people that their struggles resonate with me.
Right. That makes me feel so good, because that's, you know, that's the goal. Like, that's the goal, is just to be open and to hopefully connect with those people, which this, I mean, you did that. You did that this episode. Like, there are so many times that I, like, honest to God, teared up, because it was like, I'm finally talking to someone who is part of this small, you know, the people, I count them on my hand, right? People on my hand that I have these conversations with, that it's like, I'm not so alone. And I feel these things, and it's okay that I feel these things.
It's okay. And it's good. It's good to feel these things, even the hard ones. It's part of the process.
Right. Like Big Magic said, it's, the frustration is the process.
Yeah. It's like, you know, people go to escape rooms, people buy puzzles. It would not be fun if we put one piece in and we're like, done, boom, you know? Or if you figure out an escape room in 30 seconds, it feels good for a second, because you're like, I'm fucking awesome. But then you're like, well, that was a ripoff.
Right.
We like the struggle. We like the learning of, okay, my love interest is the Caesar's pizza guy. And how do I puzzle my way out of this?
How do I make him a little more three-dimensional and less a 90s icon.
Maybe even one day appealing and attractive.
Like actual pizza, not just a box.
A snack, as the youngins say.
As the kids do say, a snack.
So yeah, the struggle's where it's at, and that's true for writing, true. And that's the heart of a lot of the books we're talking about. They seem to all overlap of the process is, the journey is the joy. The journey is the joy. And digging your heels into the journey and struggling and grappling with the stress and the doubt and persevering, that is the joy.
I think that's a really great way to leave off, because really the joy is the process, and, you know, process is the joy, right? Not the goal. And that will be next week's episode, which is broken goals.
Broken goals and how to fix them.
Oof, I can't wait, because I'm excited. This, like this conversation, changed my life. So I'm ready.
Ditto. This was good. And as a reminder, you're fucking awesome just for writing and for being on this, you know, being on this journey. That's the, you've already dedicated yourself to this really strange, surreal thing that we do, which is awesome.
Right. And I, that, man, and that's, I don't know if this makes me an annoying doe-eyed optimist, but I am very much the person who's like, I giggle because, you know, anytime I would get a request, which there weren't many from agents, you know, I'll be open and honest about that. It's not like it was an overwhelming flood in my inbox. But anytime it did happen, I would kind of giggle, like, hysterically, and be like, isn't it magical that someone read something of mine and was like, I would like to read more. I would like to spend some of my time with this little story you made. And I think that is,
it's a true high, and it's one that doesn't last long enough, right? No. Because then the all of these joy thieves come back in there, the self-doubt, the insecurity, the comparison, the mention of a friend who's like, oh, I got 12 requests today. Yay. And you're like, fuck off.
I'm great for you, Susan.
I'm so happy for you. I'm very healthy.
I almost feel like answering this question would be for me recording this podcast with you because it has brought me the utmost joy. But what has brought you, what is something that has brought you joy this week?
Oh, I have something. This was like, okay. There was like a small moment that I had noticed. I was swimming with my kids and they can both swim safely this summer, which is like really fun. And they're like little fish right now. They're 5.5 and 7 and they just never want to get out of the pool, which is, yeah. And last summer it like literally killed my hair and all my chlorine, like it literally broke my hair apart because I wasn't showering enough after I was in the pool. There's a trout here. But this year I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Like I'm going to be a good parent. I'm going to like buy the deep conditioning and just put that shit in every time after and like the fancy shampoo, whatever. So I have been in the pool with my kids like every day when I'm not working or after work. And it is like very, very cool. I had this moment where each of them is like riding on my back. My watch is registering me like climbing a mountain. It's working so hard. And I'm like, they can now go underwater with me like little fish attached to my back. They're at the whole bottom of the pool and we're like a little mermaid family. And I was like, there's a day that I'm not going to be able to hold these two little boys on my back and swim along the bottom and then think I'm the best mom and the coolest mom and the strongest mom for doing it. But this week they think that. And that was pretty awesome. And now we're crying. Now my jealous dog is like, you didn't do it. Was it about me?
I want to be a mermaid. I'm honest to God crying.
Yeah, it was a really...
that is so wholesome.
It was a really wholesome moment. I was like, you know, again, last summer the struggle was, I'm like, this is like literally killing my hair. And I had like lashes and I was all fancy. And I'm like, you know what? If my eyelashes fall out, they fall out. If my hair breaks, it breaks. But we are on the bottom of the pool and we are mermaids and they think I am the coolest person in the world right now.
Oh my gosh. Because you are. What a cool mom. What a cool human. I love your little mermaid family.
Thank you. Thank you. I love my little mermaid family too.
I have nothing. I have nothing. What?
Well, no, you could take your time.
That's so good. Mine is going to be like, I ate a sandwich.
The turkey wasn't
valid,
bad yet.
But yeah, I'll go with it. It is family related because it is something that was like really wonderful. So it's just a family related one. We celebrated birthdays and Father's Day. We tend to be that family that's like, we're going to celebrate all of it all in one day because all our lives are chaotic and all over the place. So we went to... it was really nice because my mom had us all vote on where we wanted to spend this time. It was either at the lake because they have a boat or at this, you know, my mom built this, my parents built this tiki bar in their backyard.
Oh, that's awesome.
And they're originally from Florida. So like they were building their little Bahama tiki bar. So it has like all this reclaimed like ship wood and, you know, all these things. So it is literally... backyard tiki hut. Okay.
Amazing.
It's a little bar. It's great. So she was like, do you want to have it there or at the lake? And I was like, for the first time, I was like, I really don't want to sit in the hot sun. Let's go to the lake. Well, my vote lost and my mom voted for the lake. And so my sister, being the brilliant human being she was like, well, what if we do brunch at the lake? So for a rare opportunity, and this is super rare, it was just me, my mom, and my sister on the boat, on the lake. And that is just, I might tear up, but that is just something that is very special to me because I know that those kinds of days are limited. So it was like, it was one of those, like you're sitting in that moment and you're like, I have to remember this. I have to remember this. I have to remember this.
This
I have to remember
incredible
this feeling.
And this has, yeah, this has meaning and this is hitting me in a place and this won't last forever. And there will be a time one day where I won't be able to do this.
Right. I get frustrated so quickly with things and with things that don't matter. It's like giving a fuck about something that doesn't matter. And this is like one of those moments where there were a couple of things that it's like I could get frustrated by some things that are happening right now. But this moment is too important for that.
And this is I have a tendency to take things a step too far. So forgive me if I do. But just like
I'm ready
tying this in a little bit. You know, we were talking about how being aware that life isn't forever and that the things people we love die, we're going to die, et cetera, and how that's
right.
Part of finding joy. And it sounds like in this moment that worked. And you've talked about in previous episodes, your parents being older and how,
Yeah. You
know, forever. I know I did it. I went there. I see your tears.
It's okay. I'm okay. Like
It is something that I know I will absolutely have to return to therapy about. And it will be something that I have to deal with. And I will try not to cry right now on the podcast, but.
And it's something that keeps those moments really and truly alive when you're, you know, at this moment, you're sitting with your mom and your sister and you're in a beautiful place and you're enjoying like a little pocket of peace, like of real true peace. Oh, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. That's really, really beautiful.
We both have beautiful stories about our
family. We lived this week. We did well.
So proud of us.
Present. Yeah, we were really
present. Being present, I've never done that again. Thank you, therapy. That allowed me to learn how to be present. I told my husband recently, and again, I can cut all this out of this episode, but it was, you know, I told him, I was like, I don't think I really and truly realized how good of a relationship that we have or how good things are in my life because I was just so focused on these futures that are never going to happen. Mm-hmm. Because the worst case scenario doesn't happen 100% of the time. Why am I thinking about that?
Yep. I'm nodding emphatically because you're totally right. It's amazing how like foggy that can make life.
Yes.
I often have patients often ask me, especially for like someone struggling with depression or like a dysthymia, like a lower level depression that lasts for a while. And, like, can people really be truly happy? Like, what is it even? I have no idea what it even means to be truly happy. And sometimes, especially with teens, you know, I try to be pretty direct with teens, and the answer I'll give is all, you know, or they'll be like, you seem like a happy person. And I'll talk about, for me, it's these pockets of peace. It's these moments where I'm like, everything is right now. It just is. And it often happens when we're like driving somewhere and the kids are asleep in the back. And there's like, I have my favorite bridge leaving from either New York City or Connecticut coming back to Long Island. I have a lot of issues with Long Island, but I am a Long Island girl. And it's the bridge that has always led to home. And I always had like this moment, and we always like got my music going and got my partner next to me. And I had these like pockets of peace where I'm like, I am here. I am present. I am holding on to this. And that to me is where that's happiness. This is quite an episode.
It is. I hope people are ready. I hope they're ready. Thanks again for listening to another episode of Basic Pitches. And thank you again for tuning in to this segment about creating joy in the writing space. You won't want to miss next week's episode. It is all about broken goals, which is fantastic. Also, special episode should be coming out this Thursday. So, pay attention. It'll be dropping.